Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories that ran from June 25th through July 1st. We'll start with the featured article headlined "Renovated Brick Wall Garden Will Be Dedicated Someday" by Jim Rossow. The dedication ceremony for the magnificent brick wall garden at Allerton Park, originally scheduled for June 5th, is on hold until, well, who knows? Not that the generous couple whose $200,000 gift made it possible is upset by the delay. "That's very secondary to me," Deborah Westjohn said. "Our main satisfaction is seeing how it's been planted and growing, and knowing that, in a way, it has helped out." Last July, Deborah and husband Mike of rural Monticello made their donation to a place they cherish. Deborah's family moved to Piatt County when she was 7. "And I've been going there for the last 63 years," she said. "It's always been a cheering place with a healing balm, too." During the coronavirus pandemic, their Sunday routine includes listening to a church service, grabbing a bite to eat, and then driving to Allerton Park, which is like our second home, Mike said. The fully accessible, wonderfully landscaped brick wall garden is a sight to see, with more than 1,300 new plants. Work started in the fall, and it will take a year or two to fill up, Deborah said. "I get a little choked up seeing it all," Mike said. "When I see kids there say, 'Hey, Mom, look at this,' or someone say, 'I like the color of that,' that gives you a sense of pleasure." When restrictions are lifted, the garden will be dedicated to all who love and labor for Allerton, just like the Westjohns. "Allerton's been around for a while," said Mike, 72. "We want it to be around a lot longer." Brick wall renovation. The historic brick wall garden at Allerton Park, 515 Old Timber Road, Monticello, has been renewed with over 1,300 new plants and will be dedicated to all who love and labor for Allerton, thanks to the gift from Deborah and Michael Westjohn of Monticello. The brick wall garden, designed by the same architect as the Allerton Mansion, John Borey, is the oldest of the formal gardens. Originally a vegetable garden meant to supply the occupants of the house with fresh produce, today the brick wall garden contains lawns, bulbs, annual and perennial flowers, and espalier apple trees growing against the walls. Allerton staff notes that the new design for the four perennial beds in the garden seeks to restore a more typical English garden feel. "It includes many plants you might see in an English border-style planting," explained Micah Putnam, Allerton's facilities supervisor. "Plants are set with a pattern in mind, but not as strict as a typical formal garden, so that it doesn't come off too monotonous. The color palette includes whites, purples, pinks, burgundy, and yellows, mainly in muted or washed-out tones to keep the feel relaxed. When choosing plant material, staff considered each of the flower bed's individual microclimate created by the brick walls and surrounding trees, which create shadows in different directions throughout the day." The Westjohn's gift funded not only the plants and 25 yards of mulch, but a named endowment for the long-term care and maintenance of the brick wall garden. "Endowments are more important today than ever before," Allerton's director Derek Peterson stated. "We must grow reliable, long-term funding sources to continue progress, growth, and beauty." The couple's generosity also spurred another individual donor and the University of Illinois to fund an ADA-accessible path throughout the entire garden, replacing pea gravel paths with aggregate concrete. "We're very excited about the installation of AD-accessible, natural-looking wide paths in front of all four long flower borders, allowing everyone safer and closer proximity to the plantings," said Deborah Westjohn. "Since childhood, it has been my favorite garden. Allerton Park is, and always has been, such a special place. It must be kept vibrant, thriving, and renewed by investing in it for generations to come." Despite the COVID-19 pandemic, Allerton's outdoor areas are open, and visitors are encouraged to come out and enjoy the new plantings. A dedication event will be planned at a later date when more people can gather to celebrate. To learn more about this renovation or other upcoming projects, contact Allerton's Associate Director of Advancement, Bridget Frerichs, at Bridget F. illinois.edu or 217-333-3287. Piatt County Library Buildings Open by Steve Hoffman, June 30th. Allerton Public Library District reopened to the public on Monday, June 29th, with limited hours and restrictions. Public hours will be Mondays and Thursdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and 5 to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The shortened hours will allow the library staff to clean and disinfect the library throughout the day. The library will continue to offer curbside pickup on Tuesdays at 10 and Fridays from 10 to noon. Requirements: face coverings are required. Patrons must use hand sanitizer when entering the building. Patrons should limit their time in the library building to 30 minutes per day. With social distancing recommendations, only 6 patrons in the library at one time. No children under 16 years of age. Limited public computers available with a time limit of 30 minutes per day. No public access to the book stacks. Library staff will be available to pull any requested items currently on our shelves. No public water fountain. No public restrooms. No public access to the local history room. All returned library materials must be returned in the outside book drop. Services now available. Limited browsing of new library materials. Printing, copying, and faxing services. Other Piatt County Libraries. Bement. The Bement Public Library is currently open for curbside delivery, and the building will be open for regular business hours on July 6th. At that point, masks and hand sanitizer will be required, and staff and patrons will observe social distancing and sanitation. Patrons will need to bring their own masks, and the library will provide the hand sanitizer. Once the library reopens, there will only be 2 computers available for patron use. Any items touched by patrons and not checked out will need to be placed on a special cart. For more information, call the library at 217-678-7101. Sarah Gordo, Hope Welty Public Library, reopened on June 10th and is open normal hours. Patrons are limited to 30 minutes inside the library per visit. Staff are wearing gloves when handling books. Counters are frequently disinfected, and computers are cleaned after each use. Restrooms and water fountains are closed to the public at this point, and there are no story times. For more information, call the library at 217-763-5001. Cisco. The Willow Branch Township Library opened June 1st. No more than 3 patrons are allowed at any one time inside the building, and masks must be worn and social distancing observed. Hand sanitizer is provided. Curbside service is offered for those not comfortable with going inside the library. To make arrangements, call the library at 217-669-2312 during regular business hours. Mansfield. The Blue Ridge Township Library reopened June 12th with a change in operating hours. They are 1 to 6 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday, and 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. Patrons must wear a mask, and only 3 patrons are allowed in at one time. At this time, children under age 16 are not allowed in the library. The library also offers curbside pickup for books that have been ordered online or by phone. Restrooms, water fountains, and computers will not be available. Please access the library from the Oliver Street door. For more information, call the library at 217-489-9033. COVID-19 update. Hospitalizations tick upward as positivity rate remains low. By Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, July 1st. Increasing new cases have Illinois trending poorly, according to one report. Springfield. The state's hospital bed usage by COVID-19 patients ticked slightly upward Tuesday as the Illinois Department of Public Health announced another 725 confirmed cases and 23 COVID-19-related deaths. there were 31,069 test results reported over the past 24 hours, making for a one-day positivity rate of 2.3% and bringing the seven-day rolling rate to 2.6%, one-tenth of a percent lower than the day before. The number of those hospitalized for COVID-19, as reported by IDPH, a number that often fluctuated by the hundreds daily at the height of the pandemic, has been on a relative downward trend for more than 1 month. The number of hospital beds in use by COVID-19 patients as of 11:59 p.m. Monday remained lower than at any point prior to this week at 1,560. But the number represents an increase of 59 from the day prior and an increase of 96 from its previous low of 1,464 on Saturday. Intensive care bed usage by COVID-19 patients ticked back up to 401 at the end of Monday after 3 days below 400. That number also remains lower than at any point prior to this week. Ventilator use by COVID-19 patients dropped to its lowest point since the state began daily reporting of the figure, with 185 in use at the end of Monday, a decrease of 2 from the day prior. Since the pandemic began, the state has recorded 143,185 confirmed cases of the virus, including 6,923 deaths. There have been more than 1.6 million people tested in Illinois, and the average number tested between June 24th and 30th was 29,065 daily. According to a new study conducted by the Harvard Global Health Institute for NPR, that puts Illinois on an adequate path to mitigating the spread of the virus, but short of the amount of testing needed to suppress the spread of the virus. Suppression would require 68,211 tests per day, according to the study, and would help decrease the number of new cases further than the current leveling off. Also, according to NPR reporting, the main difference between mitigation and suppression is that suppression calls for much more aggressive and consistent testing of high-risk individuals to allow communities to clamp down on emerging case clusters faster. Suppression would also require much wider contact tracing efforts, and testing could be targeted at high-risk places such as nursing homes, meat processing plants, and other facilities requiring close quarters, according to the study. That study also showed that Illinois was one of just 14 states on a mitigation path, while only 3 states, Vermont, Hawaii, and Alaska, are doing enough testing to suppress the virus's spread. According to another report at covidexitstrategy.org, a collaboration of public health and crisis experts, Illinois has moved from a trending better category as recently as June 24th into trending poorly, based on several metrics, including measures laid out in the White House's reopening plan. The main drivers of the change in designation are that Illinois is seeing 60 new cases per million per day, and the state's 14-day trend of new COVID-19 cases is on an increasing trajectory by 16% after there were fewer than 700 cases reported each day from June 10th through 23rd. In the past 7 days, the state has reported fewer than 700 cases only once and has averaged 766 daily. Illinois PIRG, a left-leaning nonprofit consumer advocacy group, issued a news release citing the report and calling on the state to maintain all current restrictions related to COVID-19 and consider additional measures to improve containment. Illinois has made great strides in containing the spread of COVID-19 because Governor J.B. Pritzker and local leaders have listened to public health experts, said Abe Scar, Illinois PIRG director and a coordinator of Open Safe Illinois, a coalition of 25 health, labor, aging, and public interest organizations. The trending poorly ranking is a reminder that every stage of reopening brings increased risk, especially for essential workers, those in long-term care facilities, and Black and Latinx communities, and that we must continue to act to control the spread of COVID-19. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Death notices. Casey J. Shalmadine, 29, of Farmer City, passed away June 25th at his residence. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to suicide prevention awareness. Hospital, please bring your own mask, by Steve Hoffman, June 30th. A reminder from the hospital, bring your own mask. Even though the state opened things up further as part of phase 4 on June 26th, Kirby Medical Center still requires masks for staff, patients, and visitors at this point. The problem is that as the hospital also reopens more of its departments, they are finding more people coming to the hospital without masks. When that happens at Kirby, they need to supply you with one. A month ago, the hospital was giving out 3 to 10 masks per day to non-staff visitors. On Monday of last week, that number was up to 25. Those are masks that are no longer in the hospital inventory for staff and health providers. Our stock quickly dwindles, said Jennifer Moss, the hospital's chief financial officer. We're going to be doing this for a while, and there are going to be places you still can't enter without a mask, the hospital being one. So we want to get the message out to get a mask, get a cloth mask, keep it in your vehicle, in your pocket, she added. Davis brings face shields to local fire department, by Steve Hoffman, June 30th. Area Congressman Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, brought 100 face shields on June 23rd for Monticello Fire and Rescue volunteers to use. They were made available by John Deere, which used a production line in Moline to make personal protection equipment during the COVID-19 pandemic. When the domestic PPE shortage happened at the beginning of the pandemic, they changed that line over to make face shields and other PPE, said Gordy Holton, Vice President of External Affairs for the Illinois Manufacturers Association. They came to us and they wanted to get them to some who weren't able to get it on their own. The full-faced plastic shields are reusable and light enough to be part of a firefighter's normal gear. They're reusable. A firefighter can make it part of their normal PPE. You're walking up to an accident scene, you don't know what you're going to come up on. It gives you a chance to put that face shield on, just in case. It's an extra layer of protection, added Davis. The congressman delivered the face shields to Monticello on June 23rd. He also took boxes of them to Springfield, Taylorville, Bloomington, Savoy, Clinton, and Macon, to fire departments as well as to some nursing homes. Farm Progress Show is canceled, June 30th. For more than 65 years, farmers have turned to the Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days for the latest information about new products and tools they can use to boost productivity and profit for their operations. However, for the first time in its history, the show won't go on. In the best interest of our visitors, exhibitors, partners, and staff, Farm Progress has made the difficult decision to cancel both shows in 2020 due to rapidly changing conditions related to the COVID-19 pandemic. This year's show was scheduled for September 1st through 3rd in Boone, Iowa. The show alternates years between grounds there and a site near Richland College in Decatur. Next year's show is set to take place August 31st through September 2nd in Decatur. Show management had confirmed earlier that the two shows would be operated differently, with physical distancing a requirement, along with other health and safety changes to the events. While state and local officials had expressed support for both shows, Don Torti, Senior Vice President, Farm Progress, said that in a very short time, it became apparent that the situation across the U.S. had rapidly changed. We've been working with officials in Iowa and Nebraska for our shows, and we appreciate the support they expressed for us to hold the events, Torte said. They are critical partners to us, and we're disappointed to not host the events this year, but feel confident that this is the right decision for our community. One of the key features of both shows is their attraction to visitors from across the country and across the globe. Within days of our commitment to hold both farm shows, more than half the United States saw a significant spike in new cases of COVID-19. We have a multi-generational audience that travels from all across the country and around the world to attend the shows. And based on that, we felt it better to reconsider the traditional show for 2020 to prioritize the safety of all. Our community's safety is our priority always, said Matt Jungman, events manager, Farm Progress. Within the next 2 weeks, tents and other work would be underway on site. We had to make a decision based on the current landscape so that our exhibitors and suppliers wouldn't potentially waste valuable time and resources, said Jungman. While we are hopeful that case numbers throughout the country will decrease soon, we felt compelled to make a proactive decision on our community's behalf, given the information we have today. A virtual experience was already being planned as an extension to the live event. Jungman explains that while a virtual event won't give the growers the true tire-kicking experience of being at the show, the events team is gearing up to deliver a robust and dynamic digital experience. Market factors are changing fast, and we'll have more information in the coming weeks about how our virtual experience will be expanded, Jungman said. We have 400 acres of corn at two sites that have to be harvested, ground that must be tilled. We're looking at all of our options to ensure we keep our community connected and engaged. About Farm Progress. Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days are Farm Progress brands. Learn more about Farm Progress at marketing.farmprogress.com. School to Form Equity and Diversity Group by Steve Hoffman, June 27th. In the wake of a demonstration that brought 500 people together to discuss racial equality on the Piatt County Courthouse Square, Monticello School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman said a wide-ranging community committee will be formed to discuss the issue as it pertains to the school district. In light of the country's racial tensions and the demonstrations conducted at the square that went very well, I'm planning to form what will be called an Equity and Diversity Work Study Group to specifically look at our school district, Zimmerman told the school board on June 17th. I want to form this group and have them look at what we do in school to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all students, regardless of race or gender or socioeconomic status, he said. The group of up to 30 people will include school administrators, school staff, students, school board members, and people from the community. It will be kind of a self-examination of the district to see where we are doing things well and where we could do things better in those areas, added Zimmerman. The committee will be advisory only and is expected to meet up to 6 times and submit a report to the school board at its December 16th meeting. HVAC pipe fix for nursing home will be less expensive than anticipated, by Steve Hoffman, June 25th. A fix for the HVAC pipes at the Piatt County Nursing Home will cost less than expected. Nursing home administrator Scott Porter told the County Board Nursing Home Committee on June 18th that Reliable Mechanical will replace 16 expansion joints for just under $10,000. Porter initially thought all 40 joints would need to be replaced. Only being 8 pairs of joints, that's why we're seeing such a smaller number, and obviously I'm delighted how lucky we are going to get to fix our problem, said Porter. Since the entire air conditioning and heating conditioning system will need to be offline for the week to be completed, he said the job will likely be done in the fall. Phase 4. Porter was asked what Phase 4 would mean for the nursing home, which has been closed to visitors since early March. He noted that those phases don't apply to us, since they are issued by the governor and nursing home guidelines come from the Illinois Department of Public Health. He said the nursing home is essentially in Phase 1, which means it is basically closed to visitors. Porter did say that the facility may soon allow outdoor visits without screens. The nursing home currently has 80 residents and is one of the only ones in the area still taking new admissions, who are quarantined for 2 weeks upon arrival. Nursing home financial manager Stephanie Berkey gave an update on the state Medicaid audit. For the period including July 1, 2017 through December 21, 2018, the state initially found it paid $223,000 more than the nursing home was owed in reimbursements during that time span. Berkey said the facility has provided proof that the number is closer to $22,000 and is awaiting the state's response to the rebuttal. As time goes by, week of July 1st, 100 years ago, National Census shows Monticello's population now at 2,280 people. This is a gain of 299, 7% over the past 10 years. Piatt County overall total is 15,714, which is a decrease of 662, 4%. Most of the towns had a slight increase except for Cisco. The first carload of wool to be shipped out of the county was sent out Saturday night. About 13,000 pounds of wool was consigned to the wool pool from Monticello last week. Another shipment will be made as soon as the Wabash Railroad can furnish us a car. Part of it will be loaded at Monticello and the rest at Mansfield. Plans in Hammond have been completed to celebrate July 3rd. Festivities include a concert by the Bethany Band on Square, an automobile parade, and a band concert in the park. In the afternoon, a public address by Porter J. Milliken of Decatur, a baseball game, Ferry's Park versus Hammond Homers, and athletic contests with prizes. The full day will close with a final band concert, ending with a platform dance at night. The Methodist Church announces there will be no morning or evening preaching services during the month of July due to the pastor's vacation. Those who remain in town over Sundays are urged to attend the union meetings held in the Air Dome each Sunday evening. Add, the Illinois Traction System, McKinley Rail Lines, now services Peoria, Springfield, St. Louis, Bloomington, Champaign, Decatur, and Danville. Add, ICE now costs us 146% more than in 1914, though we still only sell it for 75% more. Most commodities have more than doubled. Save your high-priced foods with ICE. Is it not economy as well as a necessary luxury to use ICE? Call Monticello Ice Company, phone 320. Compiled by Roger L. Weisgarver. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. This has been Paula Kaufman reading the Journal Republican with stories that ran from June 25th through July 1st. Please stay safe. I look forward to reading with you again soon.